الله على محمد وعلى آله الطاهرين الطيبين. Inshallah, I'm towards the end of this theme that we chose, which deserves a lot more time to discuss, a lot more patience with the discussion, and more study and reading and thinking on the topic. I'm going to be wrapping it up sort of forcefully. And so we're going to mention the last couple of points very quickly. It deserves more discussion. It deserves more thought. It deserves more explanation and elaboration. But I'll leave it to you to follow up and inshallah read up on it, think about it, develop it further and further. We're talking about the path of the Ahlul Bayt, or the Ahlul Bayt being the path to our salvation. We talked about the Ahlul Bayt, we talked about the path of salvation for us, and we were sort of explaining what exactly the guidance that comes from the Ahlul Bayt, the only source of this great blessing, the greatest blessing. What is their guidance? We mentioned that they give us direction. We know where the destination, we've told, we're looking for prosperity. It's the proximity of God in the hereafter and so on and so forth. We want prosperity in this world and the hereafter. How do we get that? The direction is that you need to aim for the akhirah. If you aim for this dunya, you're not going to get anything. You aim for the akhirah, you get this dunya and the akhirah. That's one. Then we said that the Ahlul Bayt give us and teach us a vision. If we're moving in a direction, we want eternal prosperity. We don't want to have prosperity one day for a few years and for it to be short-lived. You want prosperity. You don't want a bubble, basically. Okay. You don't want an economic bubble, a spiritual bubble. You want it to be long-lasting. You want it to be eternal. So how do we get there? After the direction, you're given a vision. This is where you're headed. These are very precise descriptions. These are the guidelines of what it's going to be looking like. This is the very more precise definition of what you're looking for. A society where the individuals within that society have certain qualities. And we talked about a few of them. I believe we went over 5 of the defining qualities that give us that vision. And so whenever we move in that direction, we need to keep checking and seeing if we are making any progress towards them. Is this decision, is this policy helping towards that, or is it helping us go against it and move away from it? How is that working out? So I'm not going to continue with the vision. There are other elements within that vision. But after direction and vision, there's a third thing that we're told. There's a third set of instructions that we receive. There's a third type of guidance that we are receiving from the Ahlul Bayt. That third type of guidance are the ahkam, the rules. We have received numerous rules about how to live our lives. You have rules pertaining to your daily connection with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. How you exactly do that. The tahara of your body, the cleansing or the cleanliness or the cleansing of the body and the clothes of impurities. There's certain things that are not considered pure. You can't pray with them. These are rules. Then you need to be spiritually pure as well. You need to remove spiritual impurities. There's a physical action with an intention that has that impact. It's wudu or ghusl, depending on what our circumstances are. Then prayer, what time exactly, from what time to what time, how many rakahs, how many sujood, how many ruku. All of these are rules. There are rules about how to trade with others, how to engage in commerce, how to have a healthy economic system. There are rules. Okay. If you want to have a contract with a brother, with a sister, with a fellow human being, you want to give and take, there are certain rules. You want to exchange things. You have something, you want to give that up and get something in return for it. There are rules for it. You want to form families, there are rules. You want to bring that relationship to an end, there are rules. Okay? So there's a long list of rules that we have. Ahkam, laws. If certain crimes, first of all, defining what a crime is in Islam, in our ahkam, in our fiqh, in our jurisprudence, we have lengthy discussions on what are crimes. Okay. In Islam, fornication is a crime punishable by law if proven in court. Adultery is a crime. Sodomy amongst homosexuals, men basically, that's a crime. There are various things that are crimes. Drinking is a crime publicly, openly. If you drink, it's a crime. Right? Drinking is a crime. Selling it is a crime. Selling alcohol. We have a complete penal law that explains what is a crime. You have lengthy discussions on that. And then what are the punishments? So you have rules. Wherever you look, you find rules. Regulations. Regulating your relationship with your parents, there are rules there. Okay. With your children, there are rules there. With your neighbor, you have rules. With the government, you have rules. The government with the people, there are rules. So there's plenty of rules that we have. Ahkam. We have plenty of that. There's a couple of things I want to say with regards to the ahkam that we have. Understanding them in this bigger picture. See, we said that the guidance that we have received that is supposed to get us to eternal prosperity that will start right here on earth. It will start here, but it won't end here. It will continue. You want to get to that. There's a complete package. There's a direction given. There's a vision given. And then there are ahkam given. I want to emphasize, first of all, that let's not see ahkam as an isolated guidance that comes from to us. Don't see it as just, okay, we have ahkam, we need to abide them. Where do these ahkam fit in the bigger picture? What is the ahkam for? What's the objective? What are we trying to do? Okay. If we understand it in that bigger picture, then you start, one of the effects, there's plenty of other effects. One of the effects is that it starts making a lot more sense for us to do it. Look, these are part of the package that are going to help you, your family, your society, to reach a state that you will be prosperous, all of you will be prosperous for eternity in this world and the hereafter. But it has to be seen as part of the package. It's part of the package. It's not the only thing that we have. Islam isn't only ahkam. Islam isn't, you know, one of the ways we divide up the teachings of Islam, which is an academic division, which is okay for academic studies. When you want to focus, you know, in medicine, you divide up the body. You have experts, specialists on the eye. You have specialists that deal with your ears, with your throat. You have specialists on the kidneys, on the heart. You have skin specialists. You have these various specialists. Specialists on the bones, the joints, surgeons, all these. So you divide the work up, right? Because having all that knowledge for one person isn't. That's fine, divide it up. But even when you divide up all those different fields in medicine, every physician recognizes that this organ is part of the body. It's not just a living organism on its own. It's part of the body. Okay. I have to see the connection between this kidney and the heart, the arteries, and everything else that's in that body. Okay. I focus on this, but there's this organ is related to other organs, and together they're functioning. If I fix this up in a way that it's going to destroy the heart, then the whole thing is going to fail. Right? the rules that we have are part of the package. You want to divide it up and say, okay, if we have aqa'id, okay, you just discuss aqa'id, theology, basically. Aqa'id is our theology. Belief in one God in the hereafter, the details of that, imamah, where do we get that from, proving it, all of that, fine. Do that. Discuss that in isolation because you want to focus on that. But sometimes you got to zoom out. You got to be considerate of the fact that this is part of the religion. It's not the only thing there. The rules that we have, the ahkam that we have, are part of the teachings in Islam. They're not the only thing. Sometimes we just zoom in on them and it's ahkam, ahkam, ahkam. The only thing you worry about is rules, the regulations. And that's the only thing that's important. The only thing that the person is thinking of is these rules. What about this case? What about the other case? The only thought that the person has and is catering to is ahkam when it comes to Islam. This is not correct. There's a purpose to it. There's an objective. It's part of a package. The aqa'id described to us the destination, okay, how it is that the proximity of God is eternal blessing, is eternal prosperity. What that exactly means, why we need to listen to God, all that needs to be understood. Well, that's important. It's there. But that's part of it. It's not the only thing. The ahkam are also there. But again, that's not the only thing. There's other things as well. So the first point with regards to ahkam is that we have to see it in the bigger picture as part of the guidance that comes from the Ahlul Bayt. That's number one. The second point is, recite salawat, please. Before that, let me mention this. Since this is part of a package and there's an overall objective to the ahkam in the full package, it's going to be clear that if we only focus on the ahkam, we're not going to get to the destination. If I may use this example, if you think about an ark or a ship to be more modern. You think about a ship. Okay. There are certain rules of how to run the ship. When you're on the ship, when you're on board, there are certain ways that you got to work with this machine, with this ship that you are on. Whether it's taking care of making sure the fuel is in there and making sure all the various engine parts are functioning right, when you go and do what, whatever it is, all not too familiar with the processes that you have over there. But there are some processes, certain rules and regulations to function, to have this ship function, and for you to be able to be on top of this ship, right? If you do all of that right, you got a perfect ship and it's functioning great. But where are you headed? You didn't get on this ship to run it right, okay? That was not the objective. That wasn't the goal. You're supposed to use this to get to a certain destination. If you do all the rules and regulations of working with this ship, but you lose track of your destination, you were supposed to go to Australia, you end up going to America. Okay. Complete opposite direction if you're going from the Middle East. Okay. So there's other things that need to be taken into consideration. Ahkam alone are not going to get us there. Ahkam alone are not going to. Even if you practice what you think you have found of all of the ahkam, you contact your marja every day, 50 times a day. What about this? What about that? What about this? What about that? Okay. And that's all you're worried about. You do all of that right, you're still not going to get anywhere. Because it's not it. But... it is important in us getting there. We don't want to fall, and we don't want to fail because of us not taking ahkam seriously either. Okay, because that's what some people have. You need to tell some people, hey, calm down. Ahkam is not the only thing there. Right? Because every conversation, ahkam, rule, 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 rule. If the rules are okay, then everything is fine. No, everything isn't fine. You need to tell certain people, look, there's other things there. Certain people, many of us need to be told that, look, if you're trying to get there, you do need the ahkam. You can't skip out on the ahkam. The correct understanding. They're not the only thing there as our guidance, but they are part of the guidance. You can't get to the destination without doing this right. You got the compass, and you know what direction you're headed towards, but if you don't implement the rules that you need to have on board the ship and making use of and taking advantage of whatever it is, the equipment there, if you don't use that right, you could be headed in the right direction, but it's going to start sinking. And you're not going to get there. You got to do the rules. The rules are important. Okay? They're not the only important thing, though. Okay. So the rules are there to get us to the destination. They are there. They do get us to the destination if we put the whole thing together. Okay. Now that we've seen the full package, direction, vision, rules. Direction, vision, rules. That's the complete package. What is this, or what does it mean to follow the Ahlul Bayt? If we want to take, now this has been presented to us, right? It's a package of guidance has been given to us. It's been presented to us. Quran, Hadith, the explanations of the Ahlul Bayt with regards to the verses of the Holy Quran. This has been presented to us. How do we take it on board and implement it? How do we take this guidance? See, giving guidance is one thing. Getting it on paper is one thing. But being guided in the sense that, yes, we have embarked on that journey. We're actually moving in that direction. Again, you want to use that example. If you're on board the ship before you take off, before you leave the port, they give you all the instructions, all the rules. They give you the directions that you need to have, and they describe to you what that city is going to look like. So when you're moving, you keep checking, okay, if you're moving towards it or not. You get all that, but now you're standing on the ship. That's not going to get you there. You got to actually do things to get there. You got to actually do things. You got to implement those rules. You got to take that guidance and implement it. Go by it. Practice it. All right? But the practice of this full package, right? The practice of this full package requires something. And that's why we talked about one of the topics that we did earlier on. That's why we spent some time discussing this idea that Islam isn't only hadith, or Islam doesn't guide you. The Ahlul Bayt don't guide you in this way that they give you every little detail of what you need to do every second of your journey to your destination. The Ahlul Bayt don't teach you that. When you look at this package, if we're going to be implementing it, if we're going to be using this in getting to the destination, there are certain things that have been left to us to actually develop. Let me explain a little and elaborate on this. There are certain teachings that we have in Islam that you just implement them. Okay. Practical, very simple. You just do it. Like prayer, for example. There's nothing complicated about the prayer. You're supposed to learn how to perform this. You make that wudu. You make sure your body is clean of nijasat. You don't have any nijasa on your body. You don't have any nijasa on your clothes. You make sure you made your wudu right. It's pretty simple. And all those instructions have been given to us. Sometimes you need to do tayammum. Sometimes it's ghusl. Sometimes it's wudu. You do that. Okay, done. The instructions are there. Finished. How do you take that guidance? How are you guided through that form of guidance? By just practicing it. Very simple. But is everything in Islam that simple? Are things in Islam, is taking the guidance as easy as just doing what the hadith says? The answer is no. There are certain guidances, certain teachings that we have, the Ahlul Bayt have provided for us. God, through the Ahlul Bayt, has provided for us that it's not such that you just implement that, you're done. There needs to be a thinking process. There's got to be. Taking that guidance requires us to think and to develop thought with regards to implementation of the teaching. I'll give you a couple of examples, inshallah. Recite a salawat, please. One of the obvious standards or qualities that a prosperous society is going to have is that the individuals in that society are physically healthy. Physical health is part of a prosperous community and society. If you have people that are suffering from illnesses, you don't have prosperity. It's miserable, isn't it? You're not going to live for too long. People are dying, and before you know it, everyone's gone. I mean, if you don't have health as part of a health system, right, then you're not going to have a community or a society, or it's going to be filled with illnesses and diseases, and everybody's suffering from them. Everybody's dealing with that. When you're sick, right, you can't really function right. You're not thinking about much except for getting rid of the illness. And if you don't know how to do that, how to cure the illness, then you're in deep trouble. Okay. So one of the qualities that has got to be there for sure is health, physical health. Okay, we'll start with this example. We're told you need to have good health there. How do you have good physical health, individuals in the community? How do you deal with illnesses? That requires research, that requires thought, that requires studying, that requires getting education. The Quran hasn't given you the details. It wasn't supposed to. If it had given you all the details, then that wouldn't have been guidance. You have received that. You need to get here. How do you do it? Use the intellect that God has given you and work with it and develop it. This is one very basic example. It'll get a little more complicated. Using the same example, health. People in that society need to be physically healthy. Physically healthy. It's important. You want spirituality? We talked about spirituality yesterday. One of the key factors is spirituality. You need to have a spiritual society. I remember one of the Ayatollahs, Ayatollah Mishkini, came over to our school once in Qom. This is the first couple of years that I was in Qom. And when I saw him up close, I felt really concerned about his health. You could see, it was evident how weak he is. And the conversation he had with us was this: look, while you're young, take care of your health. He gave us this example. He said, when we were younger, I thought spirituality was fasting every day. And I kept fasting and fasting, and I didn't care about the food that I had. Okay. And now I'm like this. I can't fast. I can't do this. I can't do that. Physically, I'm not capable. Right? At that same time, Shahid Beheshti, one of the other ulama, every week he used to have kebabs. Okay. And we used to tell him, look, you're a house student, zuhud, avoiding the glamour of the dunya. What is this? You're having meat every week. He said, no, we need to take care of our bodies. Now I realize, he said, I realize he was right. Okay. And the reason is, he didn't really look at the hadith at that time at least. Later on he figured it out. The hadith are clear. You take care of your physical health as well. You don't take care of your physical health, you're not going to have spiritual health. You can't, all these worships, you want to go to Hajj? Every year, Imam al-Mujtaba went to Hajj 20 years on foot from Medina to Mecca. He walked that distance, and there's rewards in it. If I'm not physically capable, then I'm going to miss out on those rewards. I can't. Physical health is important, right? So, okay, you need to have a society that's physically healthy. Okay, we get that. We have another factor that we need to take into consideration, which is social justice. Social justice. Social justice includes health, right? Everybody's got to be able to have a healthy body. They should be able to take care of their health, their physical health. You can't make, if your society is such that certain people only can take care of their physical health, others can't, then this is not a prosperous society. Physical health is good for everybody. Social justice, right? So you have this as well. Third element that we're going to bring into the mix is the rules of private property. We have rules in Islam. Rules of private property. What is the rule? One of the rules we have. لا يحل مال امرئ مسلم إلا عن طيب نفسه. You can't take anyone's belongings without them being okay with it. Okay, it's a rule. It's a rule. If you have something that's yours, I can't take it from you unless you're okay with it. How can I own something? There's rules there. Something that's yours, I can't take it from you without you being okay with it. This means if you have a commodity, if you have a land, if you have a property, whatever you have, I can come to you and say, look, I like that property. It's really nice. The location is really good. It's prime for me. I need it. Give it to me. She says, okay, this is the price. I'm like, look, the market value of it is a quarter of that price. So look, it's mine. You want it? This is the price. You don't want to pay this price? I don't want to give it. End of story. Right? I have a farm. I develop crops. I cultivate it. And the harvest I sell. This is mine. You want it? This is the price. So like, look, last year was this, that, the other. Now we need it, this, that, the other. Look, it's mine. لا يحل مال امرئ مسلم إلا عن طيب نفسه. You have this rule. It's mine. You can't take it without me being okay with it. I'm saying I'll be okay with it if you pay this price. You don't want to pay it? Then good day, sir. Another example. I have a service that I provide. The service I provide. It's my service, right? I won't give this service unless you give me this much. I won't. Islam, you have that rule. Private property. Islam doesn't believe in the socialist model that nobody has any private property. Everything belongs to everybody. That's not the Islamic model. So you have the private property rules in Islam. You have social justice as an ideal. You have health for everyone. Or health as an ideal, so everyone, putting those two together. Health for everyone. And then you have this person, he's got services, and like, look, I will charge $5,000 for this. You like to pay it? I'll give you my services, otherwise I will not. Pharmaceuticals, isn't this what they're doing? We developed it. This is the price. You want it? Here's how much you're going to have to pay. You want to go to a dentist? What's the price of going to a dentist nowadays in this country? You want the service? This is how much you're going to have to pay. And look, dental health is very serious. Sometimes dentists, of course, really hype it up about dental health to get you to go and pay. Some of the things they tell you need to have isn't really necessary. And sometimes they'll destroy your teeth and take money from you as well. But it is really important. You don't want to have that tooth pain. Okay, if it's there, and no worship, no dua, you don't understand anything. Knock that tooth out. And you knock those teeth out, then eventually you can't eat right. And malnutrition and all those problems. And again, you're not going to be able to have spirituality. You're not going to have anything. Dental health is important. This is the cost. We charge this much. Pharmaceuticals, they develop, like we needed to. Part of it, we have to develop cures for various illnesses, various diseases. We got to develop it. Now I developed it. It's my service. I only give it for this much. we have these three teachings in Islam. How do you put that together? How do you make it such that this guy's right is not violated? Everyone in society receives that health as well. So you have health, and you have it for everyone, and no one's right is violated. What's the model? Do you go with the socialist model? Do you go with the capitalist model? Do you provide public health? Should it be like Canada? Should it be like Britain? Which is, of course, Britain is changing, moving more towards the American model. Assalamu alaikum. Which model do you go by? These are various models, right? These are people have sat down and thought, look, if we want health for the society we live in, this is how we're going to be doing it. How do you put that together? What is the Islamic model? Islam doesn't say you have insurance companies that you pay $700-$800 a month or every 6 months. I don't know what the figures are now. For a family or for individuals. We don't have that. Is insurance the way forward? Public health the way forward? What is it exactly? Do you stop? Do you tell the pharmaceuticals that, look, up to this amount is okay. You can charge that. Beyond that, sorry, you don't have any right. Physicians, dentists, government is going to put restrictions. Islamic government put restrictions. You can't charge any more than this amount. Yeah, لا يحل مال امرئ مسلم. There's a general rule there. But that general rule is supposed to get us to a prosperous society. You can't abuse that and cause only the upper class to have good health, everybody else to miss out on that. Or everybody else have to give everything they have to get that health. So they're not going to have prosperity in other areas. This is one example. See, we have to think, we got to develop a system. Public health system. You got to develop an economic system, a public health system. That's part of our acceptance of guidance. According to the Islamic ideals, one of the other ideals I didn't mention, is that you're going to have the global population increase. You think the population is huge now? This is nothing. It's got to be a lot more than this. If you want to manage all those people, what other systems do you need for it to function right? We have those ideals, you have the rules. You got to develop the system. That's part of our acceptance of the guidance of the Ahlul Bayt. Another example, economy. Look, the economy of a society is key to its prosperity. I quoted this hadith from Amir al-Mu'mineen. Kad al-faqr an yakuna kufra. Faqr, poverty, is almost equivalent to kufr. You have to have a good economic system where people are financially well off. We want people to be financially well off. We talk about zuhd. Yes, zuhd is there, but that doesn't mean keep people poor. Have the comforts. Provide everyone the comforts. Yeah, we have a problem. If you have loads of money and people are dying, you're like, I'm going to have a mansion. I'm going to have my swimming pool. I want to fly with my jet to New York to have my lunch and then go to LA for the other meal and whatever. You want to do all that? We say, no, that's wrong. There's people dying here. You can't do that. But you want to raise the standards for everyone. That's the Islamic model. That's what you want to do. How do you do that? We have certain rules. The rule of riba is a serious rule. You cannot charge interest. This is one of the rules that we have. But with this rule, can you get to social justice that has economic prosperity? Just with that one rule? You know what the ideal is? You want economic prosperity along with social justice, not just economic prosperity for 1% of the population. For everyone. Social justice, economic prosperity. And then you have a rule, no interest. And actually, no interest is actually part of a greater rule. أَكْلُ الْمَالِ بِالْبَاطِلِ. Taking someone's belongings without a return. This is wrong. There's a rule there. I don't have time to explain what usury and interest has to do with that. It seems like that's not happening. But that is, according to God, that's what's happening. The ones who charge interest, they're taking money without any return. It's the opposite. According to the Surah Baqarah, God says, يَمْحَقُ اللَّهُ الرِّبَى وَيُرْبِ الصَّدَقَاتِ. The comparison is drawn between two things. It's riba, not in trade, riba and charity. Because charity is giving for free, riba is taking for free. It says, no, يَمْحَقُ اللَّهُ الرِّبَى. Riba is not going to bring you prosperity. As individuals, as societies, no one's going to be prosperous. But sadaqat, charity, will give you that. Okay, we have these two rules. Is that going to bring you economic prosperity? How are you going to circulate the funds that are necessary for running the various businesses for economic prosperity? If you're going to need lending going on, which is an important need, qarḍ is an important need. Without lending, you're not going to have economic prosperity. So how do you do this? Take out riba. You're not going to have a bank system. You know, Muslim countries are struggling. Because take out the bank, your economy is going to get crippled. You're not going to function. The bank is based on riba though. How do you do this? It's part of the obligations of the believers to develop a system where you have the circulation of funds, you have lending, you have funding of the various projects, financing of these projects. At the same time, it doesn't work through riba. Okay. How do you do that? It requires thinking. It requires developing. Muslim thinkers have to develop this. The acceptance of the guidance is doing this. It's not only implementing it. And lastly, we're reaching, I hope I've driven that point home and we get the idea that in order to accept the guidance of the Ahlul Bayt, the guidance has been given, but the acceptance of it requires work. In certain parts of the guidance, it's as simple as just doing it, implementing it practically. Some of it, a lot of it, very important parts of it, it's us developing systems, developing technologies, advancing sciences. It's part of our religion. It's part of accepting guidance. Not because of making money, it's because it's guidance from the Ahlul Bayt that we're accepting. The last thing we need to have in order to accept this guidance, brothers and sisters, if we want to get to that destination, we said the Ahlul Bayt are the path to salvation. They are the path to salvation. What we have described up to now is basically the Ahlul Bayt in the second part of our talks after discussing who the Ahlul Bayt are briefly. The second part of it, we've explained the instructions, the teachings that have come. Right? Sort of the blueprint. But we're not only in need of the Ahlul Bayt for the blueprint. We need them to take our hands. They got to help us out. The Imam doesn't only provide instructions, say, okay, I'm done. You guys do it. Develop it yourself. Yes, we need to make efforts to develop those various systems that we need. We need to put that effort. But can we alone do that? Can we do that without the Ahlul Bayt taking our hands? Absolutely not. If you try to develop those systems without the Ahlul Bayt, you're either going to deviate. You're either going to deviate or you're going to stagnate. You're not going to move anywhere. You're not going to move in the right direction. The Ahlul Bayt need to take our hand. The Ahlul Bayt need to take our hand. How do we do this? This is a lengthy discussion. Those who've come in a bit later said, I'm cramming basically the last few points of this discussion to just make sure we have a complete package. We didn't want to leave it open-ended without reaching conclusions. If we are to take the instructions and implement it, we need the actual help of the Ahlul Bayt in the implementation of these teachings. We need their help. This has hadith, it has ziyarat, it has verses that tell us this. I don't have time to go over all that. We need it. I'm just going to get to the practical side of this. How do we do this? Besides listening to the instructions, besides trying to develop those systems, develop those technologies, as our taklif, as receiving the guidance from the Ahlul Bayt, with that intention, with that approach, with that understanding, other than that, what do we need to do in order to get the Ahlul Bayt to take our hands. There's got to be connection with the Ahlul Bayt. Okay? There needs to be a connection with the Ahlul Bayt. In every step of the way, every step of the way. Why is it said that you do Ziyarat Ashura every day? Hadith says, do Ziyarat Ashura every day. The hadith of Ziyarat Ashura says, do this, it's called Ashura. The Imam didn't call it Ziyarat Ashura. Companion comes, Alqama comes and asks for Ziyarat to visit Abu Abdullah on the day of Ashura. The Imam explains him, and this is the Ziyarat Ashura that we have. Then the Imam himself says, every other day of the year, other than Ashura, still read this Ziyarat. Why do we have these various Ziyarat? That connection. You need to have that connection during the action. You need to realize the dependence, the need, and the reliance we need to have on the Ahlul Bayt during that process. What do I mean by during the process? Again, go and watch these clips that give you this. These are models for us. They can show, they're showing us how they did it. In the most difficult times of battle, whether you look at the war that the brothers were fighting against Saddam in Iran, the Iranians, the Iraqis that joined them, the Afghans that joined them, watch the clips, know about this. In the war that is known as the Iran-Iraq War, which was basically a war between the believers and Saddam, you had Iraqis on this side fighting Saddam, okay, who are the heads of the Badr Brigade that are now fighting ISIS in Iraq. Go and read this stuff. Get that information. There were Afghans fighting. You're thinking, what does an Afghan have to do with this? They're a believer. That's what they have to do with it. They realize. Maybe I don't realize. They realize. In this war, the most difficult of times, when they wanted to go for an operation, the operation code name was Ya Zahra. Okay. Remember the lady Fatima al-Zahra. Salamullah alayhi. Their thought process is, we are liberating Karbala. We're going to go to Karbala to liberate Karbala. This is the thought process. Abu Abdullah al-Hussein, help us. Crying, shedding tears, pleading, begging. The pious scientists, by the way, on that note, again, go and watch these clips. Talk to those who were in Lebanon. The 06 war. Talk to people that are in this war right now against ISIS in Iraq. Believers that are putting their lives on the line, going and fighting over there. Look at their connection with the Ahlul Bayt. That which saves. All the funding is going to them, all the ammunition, all the support, all the intelligence, all the political support is going to them. On this end, believers there, they have the Ahlul Bayt. Connection with the Ahlul Bayt, tawassul to the Ahlul Bayt, tears for the Ahlul Bayt, begging the Ahlul Bayt for help and support. The scientists, believers who are scientists, they look at their discoveries, they look at their progress that they're making as their worship to push the believers forward. When they get stuck, they're not able to figure it out. Tawassul to the Lady Fatima al-Zahra, to Imam al-Hussein, to Amir al-Mu'mineen. These are not legend. These are not fairy tales. Okay, these are not. These are very real. Go and look at that experience. We need the tawassul with the Ahlul Bayt for our personal development, for the development of our families, for our children, for our communities, for the development of these systems, these technologies. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in this blessed month that He gives us that guidance. He opens our heart to the light of the Ahlul Bayt, to the light of the Qur'an. We ask Him to hasten the return of our Imam, to allow us to be of His close and true companions. Bin Nabi wa alih, rahimallah man qara'a al-fatiha ma'a salawat.
Yes, sir, I got it. Copy कर लिया. Need one volunteer for the Azan Maghrib. Brother.
Please. We'll get him.